Alec Holmes. This is Heal Planet, and I want to welcome Mark Allen. We spoke to Mark Allen. We have another Heal Planet cast of talking about his book, The Greatest Secret of All. Tantra for the West, it has just come out, and you've got a foreword by Shakti Gawain. You've got a introduction by, or at least a statement by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross about your book. Is this is a redo or an upgrade or an update of a book you did a few years back, correct, Mark?
Yes, a few decades back. It was really my first big book, and I took about 5 years writing it, and it came out in the early 80s. And it did pretty well at the time, and then it slowly declined and went out of print over the years. We used to let books go out of print. We don't do that anymore. And then I kept getting requests for it and for ebook versions, and so we talked about putting it back in print, and then I looked at it and said, it's been 30 years. I want to revise every word.
And there's a whole new audience. What is Tantra? What is it? Yeah, whenever I think of Tantra, we think of sex, but
right.
It's more than that.
I know, and that it kind of cracks me up. There's some interesting reason I haven't exactly nailed down that in the West, when you say Tantra or Tantra, everyone thinks you're talking about sex with some kind of mystical element. That's, I think, how most people would translate it. But if you study Buddhism from Tibet or India, or if you study certain branches of Hinduism, Hindu Tantra, they mean a whole different thing. They mean a complete spiritual path. And it took me years to really try to translate it for the West. What they mean is the path that involves every moment of our lives rejecting nothing. So, of course, it includes sex, but it includes everything else, too. It includes doing the dishes, cleaning the house, driving in traffic, everything.
So it talks a lot. I mean, you even mentioned the book Eckhart Tolle, whose message is of, you know, the power of now, living in the moment. Is that, if we were to really distill it down, that it's about being in the moment at every moment of our lives?
Yes, exactly. In a way, if you use Tantra this way or look at the real meaning, you could say Eckhart's path in the power of now was pure Tantra. He once told me he did not study anything spiritual in his 20s, didn't read any spiritual books or anything. He was just deeply depressed, you know. And finally, when he was 29, one night he was on the verge of suicide, and he went into this deep, deep fear, so black and dark. He just went totally into the fear. And then he felt this voice in his chest saying, resist nothing. Resist nothing. And that was his great awakening. Eckhart's a genius because he got it and then did not forget it. I think every one of us has had those moments where we've completely gotten it, but most of us forget it. Most of us forget it the next day or so, you know. But yeah. Eckhart did not forget and just remembered. And that is really the key to it. Resist nothing. Well, that means embrace everything. That means every moment of your life is equally as wonderful and powerful and, in fact, magical if you go into it deeply enough.
So, in other words, don't run away from or even argue with whatever the universe is throwing your way.
Right. And I end the introduction with one of the first early poems I wrote about Tantra, you could say. And I just called it Notes to Myself, because this book started as a series of notes to myself saying, what have I learned? I spent 4 years full-time studying Buddhism, 3.5 of those at a Tibetan center in Berkeley, California. And then I left thinking, what have I learned? That became my path to really try to integrate the teachings there. And I knew they were excellent, but I knew they needed to be adapted to apply to the West. And so the poem, one of the first early poems I simply wrote about Tantra is, don't reject the sadness, don't reject the sorrow, don't reject the suffering and the pain. Blessed are these things, for through them we grow into true understanding of our way.
Interesting that you talked about Eckhart Tolle having that moment. maybe a moment of enlightenment. And jumping toward the end of your book, you have a chapter on enlightenment. You talk about the Kensho experience, which is a momentary experience of oneness. He was able to hold on to that. Does enlightenment happen like that? Or is it an evolutionary process where you grow over time to become enlightened?
I think they're both true. I think enlightenment does happen in that instantaneous moment, and we've all experienced it, certainly as children. But then as adults, I know I've had some amazing moments of seeing a sunset in New Mexico, or even staring into a child's eyes, a baby's eyes, or during sex, certainly. Sex is an amazing moment of enlightenment. I sometimes say even atheists are yelling, "Oh, God."
What does it mean to be enlightened?
Well, you know, the word is defined. I use it very carefully, and I'm glad Eckhart kind of brought it out of the closet, as far as I'm concerned, in The Power of Now, because I was kind of avoiding the word enlightenment and instead using awakening, because so many people have this feeling that enlightenment must be some kind of state of pure bliss 100% of the time. And of course, we're all very far from that. So enlightenment is unreachable, and anyone who says they're enlightened has been smoking something or is just, you know, not realistic. But I love the way Eckhart redefined enlightenment as just, he says it's just an awareness of your inner being, of your presence. He says a felt awareness of your presence. So you're feeling that presence within. That is how he simply defines enlightenment. I do know in those moments of enlightenment, in those moments of awakening, what the Zen people call Kensho, it's when your mind stops, something shocks your mind, and for a moment, your thinking stops, and you just see what is. Great art can do that, can just shock you into a moment where you really look at that art, and there is a brief moment there when there's no thought, and then the wonder of what is really, you know, clear to you. And we've all had that experience. So we've all had enlightenment experiences, but we just tend to forget them. And then that stream of consciousness comes back, and then we start dealing with life's problems, and we forget what we know.
How can we get those moments to last more than just a fraction of a second? How can we get them to last for, well, you know, as you said, you can't just be enlightened and be in bliss. How do you expand the moments of time that you have that feeling?
You know, that's the great question. I have different quotes from great writers and great books up on my wall, and one right in front of my face is from Houston Smith, a wonderful man who studied Buddhism for years and years and years, and he summed it up, saying, our opportunity as human beings is to transform our flashes of illumination into abiding light. And I think that's wonderful. For one thing, he uses the word opportunity, and that's one of the first things you learn studying Buddhism. They say this life as a human being is a great opportunity. Great opportunity. What is that opportunity? It's to grow and to evolve and to become enlightened. What is that? Well, I love the way Houston Smith says it. We have had these flashes of illumination, so the challenge for every one of us is to transform them into abiding light.
But to make it last, pardon me, to make it more than just a moment, is there a technique to do that?
I think so. I think there's hundreds of techniques to do that, and all the great teachers are teaching that. They're all teaching the same thing, every tradition, everything. There's hundreds of ways. Meditation is certainly a great technique, but something that allows you to meditate throughout the day or to remember throughout the day, just the path of remembering. Or in India, they're often chanting mantras. Well, in America, what I adapted it for is saying affirmations. I really encourage people to say affirmations a lot. Whenever they feel anxiety arising, especially, find some kind of wonderful affirmation to repeat to themselves.
You have a bunch of them, and you talk about the power of affirmations in your book. But getting back to meditation for just a moment, I remember seeing an interview once with the former congressman and former mayor of Cleveland, Dennis Kucinich, who was a meditator, and someone said to him, when do you meditate? And he said, I'm meditating right now. And you point that out in your book, that meditation is something you can do all the time. If you're sitting in traffic, if you're doing the dishes, it's not something you have to necessarily sit in a lotus position and do unilaterally 20 minutes a day. It's something that can be constant, correct?
Right. But I think it has to be to have an effect in your life. I know a whole lot of people, including myself, when I studied Zen, I also spent 6 months at a Zen center. I spent 3.5 years at a Tibetan center. But 6 months at a Zen center, full-time meditating, and then before and after that, I dropped in and did quite a bit. And as I walked around through the day, I always had that sense of, I'm not doing enough. And that's so common with people that meditate. They think, oh, if I just meditate some more, then it'll affect my life more. And so that becomes the problem itself, the meditation itself, that we have this mindset where we're meditating certain times when we're sitting there, and then there's the rest of our life when we're not meditating. But if we can pull what we learn from that meditation, which is what? Which is just to sit there without expectation, to let thought go, to let stress go, to just be in the moment. If we can bring that into our lives, the more we bring it into our lives, the more wonderful our lives become.
Is meditation the opposite of affirmations, where affirmations you're actively saying something to yourself and using your mind, opposed to meditation where you want to empty the mind?
Well, in a sense it is, yeah. But in a sense, the way I see it, there's kind of two forms of meditation. There's active, and then there's the meditation of stillness. And the Zen meditation we studied, and most of what people think of meditation, is just letting thought go. And it's true, those moments of illumination are moments when our stream of thought stops and we see what is. But then I call them meditations. There's all kinds of creative meditations, all kinds of active meditations involving affirmations and visualizations. And I love meditations, and there's many of them in Tantra for the West, where people imagine even some place, their inner sanctuary, say, where they're very peaceful. And then they even imagine some person or animal coming up, and it's their inner guide. And you sit and have a conversation with your guide. You ask their name. And I love these kind of active meditations. And they're very powerful. They have a real effect in our life, because our subconscious mind remembers the kind of meditations that part of you can say, oh, that's just pure imagination. We're just imagining these things. Yes, we are. But our subconscious remembers those inner imaginings just as much as it remembers our outer activity in the world.
We talk with Mark Allen. Tantra for the West is his new book, and it is New World Library, of which he is the publisher. I love how you talk about creating from within, and then what can begin as an impulse can become a thought, and then the thought becomes a feeling, and that's how manifestation takes place, out of that feeling. So that when you're doing an affirmation, you're not just reciting a word. I presume you have to really feel what you're saying. You have to really experience it, not just recite it by rote.
Right. It's very important, I'm always saying, to find the right words that really resonate with you. The right affirmation seems to affect every cell of your body. Like, I remember when I hit my financial low and I was almost bankrupt and I had a lot of anxiety. And I came up with the affirmation first after really examining my feelings. I keep saying to people, get into your feelings. Don't run them. Don't reject them. Reject nothing. If you're feeling anxious, get into that. Ask yourself. That's the very first exercise in Tantra for the West. Whatever feeling is arising, ask yourself, what's going on with me? What do I feel like exactly? And then what am I telling myself? What's going through my mind? And you get into that feeling. Well, I got into my anxiety and I realized I was telling myself I was a fool with money and I was out of control and I just didn't understand it. If you can come up with what you're telling yourself in simple words like that, the simpler the better, then you can find an affirmation that absolutely counteracts it, contradicts it. So when I realized I was believing I was a fool with money and out of control, so I came up with an affirmation. I am sensible and in control of my finances. I am creating total financial success in an easy and relaxed manner, a healthy and positive way. I started affirming that whenever that anxiety would arise. And I affirmed it probably several thousand times, certainly hundreds of times, over the next 6 months or so. And over the next 6 months, my entire financial situation completely turned around. My company became profitable. I paid off all my debt. And we've been profitable ever since. And I've continued to say that affirmation ever since.
Don't you have to truly believe it, though? You can't just say, I'm a millionaire. I'm going to be a millionaire. Or I'm going to get $10,000 on my bank account by the end of the week. You have to believe the things you're saying, correct?
Yes, you have to word them in a way that your subconscious mind accepts them. And that's why, for me, saying I am now creating total financial success really worked. I didn't say I'm now a millionaire, because I was broke. So, but saying, I am now creating total financial success. Oh, my subconscious could, yes, you're on your way now because I am sensible and in control of my finances. Oh, sure, that's an easy one to believe. I'm no longer a fool with money out of control. I'm sensible and in control, creating total financial success. Those words worked for me. But yes, I do think you have to. I often say there's nothing to believe in what I've learned and what I teach. I never had to make a leap of faith. I never had to come to believe anything. I just tried these things with an open mind, and they worked. So I don't say to people, you have to believe in affirmations. But I do say, try them and reword them until you find something your subconscious can believe, that you can deeply believe. Okay, you're not a millionaire. Affirming I'm a millionaire is, your subconscious will deny it. But you can say you're now creating financial success. You're now on your way to create financial success.
But you have to believe that too. You have to believe that you're on your way or that you have the capability of doing that.
For me, it just worked to say, even I was $65,000 in credit card debt on the verge of bankruptcy in my early 30s. And it worked to say, I am sensible and in control of my finances. I am creating total financial success in an easy and relaxed manner, a healthy and positive way. Somehow saying, first, I'm sensible and in control, overcame that deep belief, I'm a fool, I'm out of control. I canceled that out. I said, okay, no longer am I a fool out of control? I am now sensible and in control. Some of those words for me really worked, and then they set me up for I am now creating total financial success. My subconscious mind somehow grasped that, said, okay, yeah, it's easy to create total financial success. It's not difficult.
You talk about, and by the way, we're talking to Mark Allen, whose book is Tantra for the West. There's so much in this book. I mean, it covers food and drink, money, aging, healing, creativity, sex, being alone. I'm just reading some of the chapter titles.
Mm-hmm.
Politics, freedom. What is the thread that ties all that together?
Right. Relationships, covers relationships. Definitely one thread is relationships, that whatever we do involves, we're in relationships with others. And the key there is to create win-win relationships, to be firm enough to clearly put out what you need and to be able to give other people what they need, for sure. But the one thing that ties them all together, let's see if I can find a common thread, is the path of Tantra, I would say, is basically using every moment of your life as it arises as part of your path. Every moment has a teaching. So there are teachings in your relationships. There's teachings in your relationship to money and to every one of these chapters.
You have a very good idea when you talk about asking yourself, well, what is, if you're having trouble with a particular situation, ask yourself, what is it I'm to learn from this? What is it the universe wants to teach me? And somehow, some way, on some level, you get that answer, correct?
Yes. And by doing these little exercises in the book, you end up finding your own inner guidance. Maybe that's the thread of Tantra for the West. It's the path of using every moment of your life to find your own absolutely unique way through life and up the mountain to awakening or enlightenment or whatever you call it, to a far better life. It's finding our internal guidance. It's no longer dependent on any other teacher or guru or system or tradition even. It's finding your own way. And maybe that voice within will point you to a teacher or a tradition that you need for a while. And that's perfectly wonderful. But then I say in the book, if any kind of teaching or tradition or book or teacher creates more neuroses than they dissolve, then it's time to leave. You know, if they help you dissolve neuroses to have a more wonderful life, great. Embrace that teaching and tradition.
But you believe the answers ultimately are all within all of us, right? Each of us has within us the answers we need.
Yes, and that's ultimately the best answer is always the one that arises within.
And you have to trust yourself to be able to get to that or know that what you're sensing is the right answer. So there's got to be some level of self-trust.
Yes, but again, you don't have to make a leap of faith or anything. You just quietly sit, ask a question, and then let all thought go and see what arises. And you'll see, you'll feel. If you're upset about something, and so what arises has all this anxiety, you can see this, you can feel it. If you get quiet enough, even if you're upset about something, if you go off alone, get quiet, relax, let all thought go for a minute, then ask for guidance or ask, what should I do in this situation? And get quiet. An answer will emerge sooner or later, and it'll feel wonderful to you. It has a very good feeling.
One of the sentences you have, you say, remember that when you're following your intuitive guidance and acting for your highest good, the universe will always take care of you. And you'll always have enough. The ability to trust the universe that it's always going to act on your behalf, that's something some of us may really have to be able to accept and learn and trust that the universe will do that for us.
Right. I did that all through my 20s, and I look back now and wonder sometimes, how did it all work? Because for 10 years, I made very little money, very little money. In fact, into my 30s, I made very little money. I started a publishing company the day I turned 30, and I didn't really draw out a salary for at least 4 or 5 years before it got up and functioning, and I finally had a salary. So I sometimes wonder, how did I do that?
Yeah.
But the universe does provide. If we dare to go for our dreams, I encourage people to go for their dreams, to really do what excites them, and somehow it'll work out, I guarantee.
You say by focusing primarily on your short-term needs, food, rent, mortgage payments, clothes, dental, medical bills, you can lose your long-term or long-range vision. But don't you have to focus on those things just to survive, to pay the rent, to make sure you're not foreclosed upon?
Yes, you do. It's true. And it's more challenging now than it was when I was in my 20s. When I was in my 20s, rent was cheap. You could work part-time 3 afternoons a week and pay your rent and buy food. So the world has changed. Rents become much more expensive. So yes, you have to be realistic some of the time, but don't let your realism, your need, I meet so many people that say, oh, I'm locked into a mortgage and I have a family and I'm doing a job I can't stand, but I'm stuck with it. That's life. And I say, well, it doesn't have to be your life. Yes, keep doing the job. Keep doing the job, but keep dreaming and find out there's some way. You've got some time. You've got some free time. You've got Saturday afternoons. You've got an occasional evening and you've got an occasional holiday. There's some time you can take for yourself to really tune into what you want and what you need and what you want to do.
Something you say in the book, in the chapter on food, I find fascinating, where how you perceive what you're eating, I got the sense you were saying, is more important than what you're actually eating. So if I think that I'm going to get fat, or I'm eating whatever I'm eating is going to make me fat, I'm going to get fatter than if I'm eating maybe the same food and not worrying so much about what it's going to do to my body. Is that an accurate way to put it?
Well, I do think if we have a lot of fear around food, I do think that's really bad for our health. I open up the food chapter with a poem from China, from the 8th century. It says, release your hold on earth, water, fire, wind. Drink and eat as you wish in the Buddha mind, or Nirvana mind, some translation, in the enlightened mind. All things change and all are completely empty. This is the great enlightenment of the Buddha. All things change, all are completely empty. I had a friend years ago who was in her mid-30s who had such fear about food. She was dating a friend of mine. We went to a restaurant, a Chinese restaurant. She looked at the menu and said, I can't eat a thing here. Huh. We went to a Japanese restaurant and she had grilled vegetables, no oil. That's what she ate, grilled vegetables, no oil. Uh-huh. And she died of cancer in her mid-30s, having had years of this incredibly pure diet. I think her fears were really bad for her health. Her fears were far worse than any kind of bad food that she was eating.
Conversely, I wonder if, could I just say, well, I'm going to have a pint of Haagen-Dazs every night, and I love chocolate chip ice cream, and it's going to make me thin, and because I'm going to do great on this because I love eating it so much, and I'm not, depending upon how I view the sweets that I love, can I do anything I want, eat anything I want, and not worry about it because of my mindset?
Well, if you really believed it, it'd be interesting. I got a thing on the internet said, this diet, it's the watch TV and eat pizza and lose weight diet. Yeah. I thought, okay, that's, but I do believe if you're going to have a pint of Haagen-Dazs, you should work out or something. I actually counseled this couple once. The one woman was all upset because her partner would have a big thing of Haagen-Dazs ice cream or Ben & Jerry's every night. But the thing is, her partner was an aerobics instructor, and she worked out 4 or 5 times a day, and she was in great shape. I said, hey, sure, she can have a pint of Haagen-Dazs every night. Good for her.
But if you're sitting at the desk 8 hours a day, chances are that's not a very good idea. You have a final practice, an essential key in the book, where you talk about another meditation exercise, which you have in many of these chapters, asking yourself, what is it about blank I need to understand? Basically, a way to resolve some of the key issues in our lives. You obviously have some experience that this works.
Yes. And again, it's tuning into your inner guidance. I encourage people to consult themselves before they consult even a friend, and definitely before they consult a psychic or anyone else. Because anyone giving you advice inevitably is going to tell you what they would do in the situation. it's not necessarily the best thing for you at all. Who knows what the best thing for us is? Only we know that, and we can find out. So it really empowers people, these simple little exercises of turning within, asking yourself the questions. What do I need to understand about my relationship? What do I need to understand about my struggles with money? What do I need to understand? And then listen, and answers will arise.
The book is called Tantra for the West, A Direct Path to Living the Life of Your Dreams. Mark Allen, I love your work. I thank you very much for talking to us on Heal Planet today. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Alan. My pleasure.
Thanks so much.